Hello everyone, welcome back to J-Talk Extra Time, the as weekly as possible podcast that focuses on the lower leagues in Japan. I'm John Steele, and joining me as usual is Stuart Smith. Stuart, good evening, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you, John. It's good to be back, and you obviously excelled in your presenter's chair last week, so you get another well-deserved chance to shine again, my friend.
Squad rotation exists and is an ever-present threat, but for the time being, I'll stay on this side of the mixing console, Stuart, but don't worry, you know, the games come thick and fast. I'm sure we'll be switching places before too long. But yeah, good to have you along for the ride, as usual. Before we get into the J2 chat, we should probably do a quick update for the listeners. A peek behind the curtain, I suppose. We're recording this on Wednesday night, September the 18th. So, we should say congratulations to Urawa Reds of J1. Obviously, they are now through to the semi-finals in the Asian Champions League after their away goals win over Shanghai SIPG. So the second leg was played last night in Saitama. It finished 1-1. Obviously, the first leg was 2-2 over in China. So Urawa through on away goals. Difficult one for me, Stuart, because I don't like Uro very much, but Marko Arnautovic plays for Shanghai, and as a Stoke fan, not a massive fan of his either, the snake. Unfortunately, the news wasn't as good coming out of Ibaraki this evening. Kashima Antlers drew their second leg against Guangzhou Evergrande, a 1-1. But the first leg of that game was 0-0, so it's Guangzhou who go through on away goals there. So coming up in the semi-finals, Urawa will host Guangzhou in the first leg. So that should be a massive game. And all the best to Urawa. I hope they can go through to the final and lift the Continental Trophy, Stuart. Also, before we get on to J2, we should mention that quite a few Emperor's Cup games took place tonight across Japan. So it's round four in the Premier, I suppose we can say that, cup competition. In the archipelago. Six games tonight. The other two games involve Urawa and Kashima, so they're going to be played next midweek because they were in ACL action this week, obviously. But in the games that were played, Kobe beat Kawasaki 3-2. I don't know if we can call that a shock. Kawasaki have been a bit pretty rotten recently. Hiroshima and Oita was 1-1 after extra time, but Oita pulled out all the stops in the penalty shootout. They won 10-9. In the end, Tosu beat Seretse Osaka 4-2. Good result for them. In the Shizuoka Derby, Iwata and Shimizu, that finished 1-1 after extra time, but Shimizu prevailed 4-3 on penalties. So I think Barry Valder will be a happy man. Nagasaki beat Sendai 2-1. So that's at least one J2 side through to the next round, Stuart. And then we should save a special mention for Hosei University. The last university side left in the competition. They gave everything away at Vanfori Kofu. Kofu went in front early on, but Hosei managed to force extra time with an equaliser. But Kofu scored quite early in the extra time and held on to win 2-1. Well done to Hosei. I think they've won a lot of admirers with the way they've played, knocking out Tokyo Verdy and Gamba Osaka, but eventually succumbing at Chugin Stadium. So just a quick mention about the quarterfinal ties coming up. Kobe will play Oita, Tosu take on Shimizu, and there'll be an all J2 clash, Stuart, Nagasaki against Kofu. So at least one J2 team will be in the semifinals this year. Somewhat suspiciously, the fourth quarterfinal will be the winners of Kashima against Yokohama Marinos, against the winners of Urawa against Honda FC, both the games that are held over to next week. We'll see how that goes. Any comments on the ACL or the Emperor's Cup, Stuart, before we move on?
No, but it's good to see that at least one J2 representative will be there in the final four. I think you gave a really good rundown of what happened, and I know Lost in Football, Chris was down at the Vanfori Kofu Hosei University game, so I'm pretty sure he had a good time. And props to the university students. They they gave Kofu a really good run for their money, and unfortunately just Kofu was one bridge too far for them after slaying Tokyo Verdy and Gamba Osaka. But it'll be an interesting game next week in Saitama when Urawa, possibly with eyes on well, G1 survival slash Asian Champions League glory. They might have one eye off the ball when they take on Honda FC, and Honda FC are no mugs. Just ask Consadole Sapporo or any of the other J League teams that they've taken out on their way here. So yeah, good stuff in the Emperor's Cup and Champions League. Yeah, I'm not really that particularly bothered about it, but it'd be good to see a Japanese winner. I would venture. So yeah, why not?
Yeah, fair enough. I think we can talk about this ad infinitum in future podcasts. But yeah, Emperor's Cup, I think, still blighted by fairly low attendances at times and perhaps some ineffective promotion on the part of the JFA. But yeah, I think there's been some really good games in the competition this year, and hopefully that will continue for the quarterfinals and the semifinals as well. Okay, let's get back to our regular beat then, Stuart J2. Before we talk about the games and the thrills and spills from the weekend, you have an update on a hot story from last week's pod, so take it away.
I do have an update. So last week we spoke about an quote-unquote offensive banner that was put up by Tokushima Vortis supporters when they faced their island rivals Ehime FC. Before we started recording, before we came on air, you coined the phrase "gate flag gate," which is pretty good. I want to take credit for that myself, but I can't because I'm too honest. So I'll give you the credit for it. But some punishment was handed down today, and the person who put up that banner has been banned for the next 5 Tokushima Vortis home games, and they've also been banned for all away games during that home game ban as well. So I think the offender will miss 9 or 10 Tokushima Vortis games, which for banner banter seems a little bit excessive, but you know, you can't have people holding up offensive banners or sneaking in as kids these days. So the league has got to be tight on these kind of things, wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, I think I kind of am quite ambivalent about this. I think your ACL apathy is perhaps reflective of my policy in this. I think, yeah, it's always difficult to draw the line between, as you say, banter and offensive content. And I think perhaps supporter culture in our home country in the UK is a bit more used to that kind of thing. But yeah, I think you can get away with quite a lot with your gate flags and your banners. But once you're dropping the F-bomb, then you're liable to find the ban hammer being wielded by the clubs and the authorities. So hopefully there's lessons learned for everybody. Okay, let's get on to some football then, Stuart. I think you mentioned in our pre-show that there wasn't as much explosive action in the league games as there has been in recent weeks. So that should give us a little bit of breathing space to catch on all of the games in as much detail as necessary. We'll start at the top, as is customary, with Kashiwa Reysol. Now, they're still in first place at the top with 63 points, but they only drew again at the weekend, 1-1 away at Kofu. That means that Kashiwa's lead at the top's now only 6 points, and they've gone 3 games without a win. I watched the highlights of this game. I think it's probably fair to say Kofu had the better of the first half. Kashiwa goalkeeper Kosuke Nakamura had to make some really good saves from Peter Utaka and Shigeru Yukutani. And I noticed as well, Jiro Kanata, who is the captain for Kashiwa on the day, clearly handled the ball in the penalty area just before half time. But luckily, the referee missed it, so Kofu didn't get the penalty they probably should have had. And yeah, there was a sucker punch from Kashiwa just after half time. So Cristiano, who, as you've mentioned many times, red hot this season, kind of floated across to the back post, and Ato Esaka headed Kashiwa in front. But Kofu were level in pretty quickly through Hidetaka Kanazono, the substitute, after another substitute. I think Alano's shot was blocked. I think that might have been Kanazono's first touch after coming on. I'm not 100% sure on that. But yeah, did you see the highlights of this game, Stuart? What did you think?
Yeah, I did see the highlights of this game. And yeah, you're right. It was Kanazono's first touch after coming on to replace Kenta Utada, who I think we'll speak about in just a couple of minutes, I would say. For a J2 spectacle, again, I always seem to say this when Kashua play, it doesn't seem to matter if it's at home or away. I know the Chugin Stadium is not the most kind of fan-friendly or supporter-friendly stadium, but there's a big crowd. Kashua packed the away end in their bright yellow, obviously called for red and blue. It looked really good on TV. The pitch looks good, which it might seem like a given, but J2 standard pitches are not very good these days, and Corfu's is absolutely beautiful. It's like a lawn bowls carpet. It looked really good. They did have Corfu did have the better of the first half. I think Nakamura came out on top in his personal duel with Peter Utaka. I think he denied him twice. Made a really good save from Yokotani as well, which you mentioned. Clear penalty. I'm not really sure how the referee missed Kamata's handball, and I think the look of shock on Peter Utaka's face as well probably said he was just as shocked. Ataru Esaka is not the kind of person you expect to be rising up to head in a ball at the far post, but that's exactly what happened just after half time. But it's hard to, it's hard to disagree that Corfu didn't deserve a share of the spoils in this game. I think they had enough chances to get the point that they deserved, and it just took the wily old substitute Kanazono to come in and with his first touch level things up. I think it's interesting, like, when does a blip become a wobble that becomes a loss of form? I think that's something that Kashua, they've had a reasonably, not tough, I would say, because they drew against Niigata at home, they lost against Yamagata at home, and they've now drawn at Corfu away. I think it's still a wobble, but I think they just need to be careful a little bit that this doesn't continue into something more more dangerous with regards to their promotion hopes. I don't think it will, but it's just something to keep an eye on, I would say, right now.
I think you should mention they've got two back-to-back home games coming up, Kashua, and they're hosting Ehime this weekend and then Tokyo Verdy the weekend after. So, you know, two home games in a row against opposition, which is, I would argue, safe from relegation, but not likely to trouble the playoffs. I think I can see them picking up 6 points from those two games, and then this mini wobble or the jitters that they have will be forgotten. But yes, if they don't, if they slip up in one of these two home games, then maybe we'll be talking about wobbles again. For Kofu's part, they're eighth still, and just 4 points off the top six, so it's all to play for them, I think, over the last 10 games. The team in second place now is Montedio Yamagata on 57 points. As I mentioned, 6 points behind Kashua. So they kind of have slipped into that second automatic promotion spot, Stuart, with a 3-0 win away at a very wobbly Kagoshima United side. This game was pretty much done and dusted after 26 minutes, because by that time Shuhei Otsuki had scored twice for the visitors. The second goal, a sumptuous kind of cushion volley across the goalkeeper, which is worth watching again if you haven't seen it. And then Tatsuhiro Sakamoto added a third quite soon after that. So it was kind of the game was up at that point. Kagoshima had quite a few chances in the second half, including I'm not sure who it was a brilliant kind of a chip that came back off the post. That would have been a brilliant goal if it had gone in. But I think most of these chances came because Yamagata had basically taken their foot off the gas and declared at 3-0. What did you make of this game?
Yeah, and probably not much else to add to what you did. The game was over after the third goal. It was very, it's the word I'm looking for, like, brutally efficient from Yamagata. It's a long trip from Yamagata to Kagoshima, and they Montedio showed no ill effects of the trip, and you know, they are starting to click again. They had a bit of a wobble. This would be a game that kind of we might have looked at and said, oh, this is a tricky assignment for them. We're playing against a Kagoshima team who have had some good results at home recently. But Montero Yamagata are really well drilled. I think we probably say this all the time, but they're a team who they're like a slightly better version of Mito. They know how to play. They know how to play in their system, and they've got players that aren't superstars, but they function really well in their 3-4-3 kind of formation that they play. And I think just to go in there, put the game to bed after 25 minutes, they could conserve energy. And yeah, I think it was a very efficient game from Montero Yamagata. They didn't really have to scale the heights, even though, like you said, Otsuki's second goal was really well taken. And they look pretty good form at the moment, and up into second place. Yeah,
I think we sounded the alarm about Yamagata selling Toyofumi Sakano to Matsumoto kind of during the transfer window, that because he was a top scorer at the time, it seemed like bad business, but it doesn't seem to have done them any harm, does it? Otsuki stepped up and is scoring pretty regularly, and Jefferson Baiano, who I think is possibly a better player, he was on the bench for the majority of this game. He only came on for the last 15 minutes. Do you think Yamagata have got much chance of actually holding on to that second place? Because when I ran a Twitter poll, there wasn't much love for them getting second place with the listeners or with my followers, certainly. But how do you rate their chances? I mean, do you think they could hang on in there, or are they more likely to be top six but not top two, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I tend to go back and forth on this answer. Like, because last week I said that Yokohama were in the pole position for second place, but you know. Like I said, like Yamagata, they're really well drilled. Their coach Kiyama knows exactly what he wants the team to do. They did sell Toyofumi Sakano in the summer transfer window, but they did bring in Yuya Yamagishi, who I know from his days at Gifu, he struggled for a position, not because he wasn't good, because he was obviously one of the better players at the club, but Gifu didn't play the type of position that he plays, and he's slotted in just behind the front man. So he plays in, not to get too deep into the weeds, but Yamagata play a 4-3-3, but the top three is kind of a triangle. It's one up top and two behind, the shadows, as the DAZN people call them frequently, and he's one of those two shadow players, so he does a lot of work kind of behind the front man, and he does it really, really well. He's such an intelligent player, he knows where the space is, and he's added something to that team where they could have had a net negative by selling Sakano, but I think they possibly ended up with a net positive with kind of the form of Otsuki and the form of Yamagishi coming, and they've still, like you said, they've still got JB on the bench. Jefferson Baiano. And then can they hold on to second place? I don't see why they can't. Again, the J2 is a little bit of a lottery, and the top six is more of a lottery than most, but they're not an easy team to play against, and I don't think teams will fancy playing against them, especially when they see kind of how easily they just swat aside inferior opposition like they did with Kagoshima. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's true. I think it's probably worth pointing out that we shouldn't get probably too excited about this particular game, because Kagoshima were quite poor, and I think from what I saw in the game, their game plan was to kind of take the game to Yamagata, but it obviously backfired spectacularly. It was notable how aggressive and quick Yamagata were in the press, if you like. I think the first goal came when Nildo was bullied off the ball, and then the third
that
goal
was by Yamagishi as well. Something he's really good at doing.
Yeah, I think the third goal also involved Kagoshima being like completely comfortable in possession, but then being bullied off the ball, and suddenly a chance was created. So I don't see why Yamagata couldn't hang on in there. But I think with 10 games to go, there probably is still time for maybe one more wobble from them, if you like. Wobble seems to be the operative word this week. But it depends. It depends whether they, you know, if they perhaps, you know, go on and lose two games in a row or something, that they could do it. But I think maybe Yokohama, possibly a stronger squad. So we'll see. But I think they've got a chance, haven't they? All right, Stuart, we mentioned Yokohama FC already just briefly. So we'll talk about their game now, because they're in third place at the moment. They had sort of big match vibes because they hosted Omiya Ardija, kind of a Kanto rivals, if you like, at Mitsuzawa. The stadium was completely sold out, a crowd of 12,189. I know that the capacity is higher, but for whatever reason, all the tickets that were available were sold. But the game didn't really live up to that. It finished Yokohama FC 0, Omiya 0. Yokohama FC dropped down a place to third, 1 point behind Yamagata, and that means Omiya stay in sixth place. They have 54 points, just a little bit further back. Akira Toshima was the man, low energy Toshima. He should have won it for Yokohama FC. In the second half, about 50 minutes left, he shot straight at the Omiya goalkeeper Kasahara from point blank range. And shortly after that, Leandro Dominguez set him up with a kind of trademark peach of a cross, but he headed it against the bar. But I don't know, I'm not sure how disappointed Yokohama will be. They're 14 games unbeaten now. And I noticed Omiya made 5 changes to their team, the side that drew at home to Machida last week. So I think maybe they're still looking for the kind of magic chemistry, the right formula. It's no wins in the last 4 games for them. What do you think of this game, Stuart?
Yeah, I think it's a draw that obviously it's not what both teams wanted, but I don't think either team will be too disappointed with the outcome of it. I wouldn't have thought. Think from the Yokohama FC side, they started with Iber up front, Leandro Dominguez and Shinsuke Nakamura, so the kind of dream kind of trio who kind of the Yokohama FC supporters wanted to see. They started this game, but it seemed like Omiya, I didn't see the full game, I've only seen the extended highlights, seemed like Omiya kind of set up to stifle Yokohama. I think they played Wama up front, but they kind of played Akimi Barada in a kind of more advanced role. They played a lot of midfielders. I think Noriyoshi Sakai got the nod as well. And I think they, instead of playing with out and out forwards, obviously they played with Wama, but they played with kind of what's his name? Okunuki?
Kanji Okunuki.
Kanji Okunuki, yeah. Who's really high energy when you talk about low energy Toshima. Like, Okunuki is really high energy. He's got lots of kind of vibrancy about him, but he's not what you call kind of an out and out forward or creative player. And I think if I didn't know any better, I'd say that Takuya Takagi set up to take a draw from this game and not lose it. And I think given that, I think he'd be relatively happy with a 0-0 draw in the game, I would say.
I think that's all fair comments. It's interesting, we talked a bit about Ipe Shinozuka on a previous episode, and he seems to be increasingly influential for Omiya over the last couple of games that I've seen. I don't know whether that's because, as you said, they were a bit light on creativity in this particular game. Perhaps they changed their style a little bit to kind of contain Yokohama. But yeah, it's interesting to see him having more and more of a role in the squad, because he's a fairly new addition. I think Omiya's best chance probably fell to Robin Simovic off the bench in this game. But I noticed that the chance came about because a few weeks ago, Daisuke Matsui, who was on the bench for this game, he lost possession kind of just in front of the back four. And I forget which game it was, but he ended up conceding a penalty as a result.
Is that Corfu, possibly?
I think it was a game against Corfu, so maybe two rounds ago. But it was interesting, Shunsuke Nakamura did exactly the same thing in this game in the second half. He was a kind of mix of him being played into trouble and then him not really realising, not having the awareness of how much trouble it is. He ended up trying to kind of back heel or flick the ball out of a cage that Omiya were pressing him into, and it ended up with the ball breaking. And I think it was Simovic had a chance, but as is customary, I think, for him this season, didn't do as well as he should have done with it. But I think if I was setting up to play against Yokohama FC, that point where a midfielder receives the ball from the centre back is where they seem to be most switched off.
Yes.
And the best chances of winning the ball back. So I would definitely, whoever's playing against Yokohama FC, you've got to press them high up the pitch, and you have to sit on those holding midfielders, because yeah. they are the ones who switch off when the transition happens, as the hipsters say.
Yeah, well, that's exactly right. I think Yokohama FC are most dangerous once you get their midfielders facing forward, because their passing is so good, and they've got width as well. That's very difficult to deal with. But if you can stop it at source, which kind of Corfu tried to do, and like Almia seemed to have a decent plan of doing it, if you can stop the source of the attack coming, I think that's obviously like the best way to try and nullify. I mean, it's easier said than done. I mean, they've got some really good players in there, and when they do transition out, and it does look really good. But if you can kind of, like you said, kind of cage them out, or just kind of put them into a cul-de-sac, then I think you have a decent shot of blunting what is increasingly seems to be a very, very good Yokohama FC attack.
Very good. Okay, Stuart, that's the tactical chat out of the way.
Yeah,
normal programming can be resumed. Kyoto Sanga are in fourth place, and they badly needed a win this weekend after five games without one. They got the 3 points. They beat Machida's Elvia 2-0 at home, so that moves them on to 55 points, just one behind third place Yokohama. Machida gave a pretty good account of themselves for the first 60 or so minutes here. It was 0-0 after an hour, but then Keiya Sento crossed, and Koyamatsu tapped in to give Kyoto the lead. And then Kazunari Ichimi, who's I think my favourite Kyoto player, he was on the bench for this game, but came in with about 10 minutes left and scored a nice solo goal to wrap up the points. Was it quite a routine regulation win for Kyoto in the end? It was a much needed victory, obviously. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that possibly kind of Machida gave... they put a lot of effort in, but I'm not sure that they kind of threatened as much as they needed to. I think just reading kind of some of the Machida comments on Twitter after the game, I think our friends, the Fortress Nozota people, I get the feeling that they think kind of Naoki Soma is a bit stale now. And I think that it's something that you can tell when you watch Machida as well. It's nothing seems to be that different, whether they're losing 2-0, whether they're winning 1-0. There just seems to be a lack of kind of freshness, or a lack of new ideas that are coming in. And that's maybe I thought about asking you, like, do you think Naoki Soma will be Zelvia manager next year? Because at the moment, I don't see it. I think Machida, allied with their kind of the money that's being pumped in and a possible name change, I think there might be a complete break with the current system. I don't see Soma being part of that next year.
I'd agree with that. I don't think this season has been particularly memorable or impressive. And I think if it wasn't for Romero Frank, they might be in even more trouble than they are in the table. So, yeah, I'd agree with that. I think change is probably overdue.
Yeah, I think that's kind of my impression as well. It's the impression I get from Zelvia fans on the Twitter. Like, for Kyoto, I mean, first win in a while, like you said, and it was I think it was Ichimi's first goal for about a month or so. You think of him being prolific, and I think he scored, I can't remember if it's like 12, 13 or 14 goals this year, but it was his first goal for a month. Miyoshi started, but Ichimi came on, scored the goal that eventually wrapped the game up. Much needed. Like, they hadn't won for a while. But as kind of J2 is, these days. They've had their wobble, and with this win, they're still only, 2 points off automatic promotion. It's kind of out of the top six, they were the ones that really needed a victory kind of this weekend, and they got it. And they, whether they can stay in contention for the automatic promotion spot, I don't know, because I genuinely think that Yokohama and Monte and Yamagata are better teams than them. But, you know, you look at the rest of the season, you look at the games that they've kind of that they've got to play. All the teams have got it in their own hands, but you know they've still got to play Yokohama FC, and they've got Kashiwa on the last day of the year as well. But aside from those two teams, I mean, they've got Kagoshima, they've got Ehime, they've got Ryukyu, they've got Chiba, they've got Niigata. There's a lot of Yamaguchi. There's a lot of teams that in there don't have a lot to play for, and you'd think maybe if they started to kind of bank on their motivation being greater than the other teams, I think the rest of the season doesn't look that imposing for them. And so if they can kind of get it together, I'd say they've got a pretty decent shot of being top four. Whether they'll be top two, I don't know. It's a little bit difficult for me to kind of like put that forth right now, but good win for them, needed win, and kind of sets them up nicely.
Yeah, good weekend for Kyoto. I think you praised Kofu's pitch earlier, so we should probably do the opposite. The pitch at Kyoto Stadium is looking very rough for this game, so I think we'd be probably pleased to have won quite comfortably, no injuries and no comedy bouncing ball defending incidents. Okay, then we talk about the team that currently sit in fifth place then, Stuart. Mito, they were the only side in the top six to lose the weekend, but they're still on 54 points, level with sixth place Omiya. Mito went down 2-1 at Jeff United at Fukuda Denshi. I think, just judging from what I saw, this was probably the most exciting game of the round. I know I'm biased because I watch a lot of Jeff games, but it's a long time since we've been able to include Jeff in the game of the round conversation. So please indulge me for a minute or two. I thought Jeff were well up for this game. Hirotaka Tameda and Yusuke Chajima both had good chances early on for them. But a typical Jeff, Mito soaked up all the early pressure, and then when they had a quick break, Takaki Fukumitsu set up the captain, Hiroyuki Mae, to kind of slam the ball past Yuya Sato. Mito 1-0 up. That lead only lasted for about 8 minutes, though, because Brazilian striker Kleber scored an absolute golazo, I've put in my notes, where he kind of chested down and half volleyed over the keeper from about 25 yards. Absolutely a fantastic strike. And we should credit Yuya Sato, the Jeff goalkeeper, much maligned by me on this podcast. He made a really good save from Koki Ogawa just before the break to keep things at 1-1. And in the second half, Kleber scored Jeff's winner from the penalty spot. He was clearly impeded by Nduka Boniface, the Mito centre-back. It was incredible to see Boniface like arguing with the referee about this. It's one of the most blatant penalties you'll ever see. So disappointment for Mito, but I think for Jeff, first win in six games and first home win for about 2 months, I believe. I think that probably just tips the scales in their favour. I think that they'll be safe from relegation. Now, what did you make of this game, Stuart?
It's an interesting game because it's one that I spoke about last week on the pod that I felt might be a tricky one for Mito, because just every so often these kinds of games against Jeff can present some problems, because if they decide to rock up and decide to play well, then, you know, they do have some good quality players. I mean, you look at Jeff's bench on the weekend, they had Funayama was on the bench, they had Yukihori Gome was on the bench, Geria was on the bench, Sato Hisato, I know he's not the force that he was, but he's a decent player for this level. But you look at the bench and you'd obviously think that, oh, they've got some good players in the starting lineup as well. And they, you know, Kleber scored a really good goal. I didn't say this to you in the pre-pod meeting, but I'm just going to drop it on you right now. I don't think the goalkeeping was particularly stellar for that goal. I think the ball went basically in the middle of the goal. And I think that the first impression is that that's a brilliant goal. I think when you look at it from, especially behind where Kleber strikes it, if you look at the reverse angle, it looks distinctly like the ball goes in the middle of the goal. But it did move in the air, and they had the surprise element as well. And so
just couldn't let Jeff have one.
What I will say is that Boniface, the Ndoka Boniface, it's kind of the third time that I've seen him I'm trying to think of a word here, Jeff things up, if you want to put it in there. Because I know I've seen him concede a penalty before. I've seen him being sent off before. He's a good defender with, I think he's got a bit of potential, but he does have the kind of Jeff gene running through him, where at any singular point in time, he might do something spectacularly bad. And so I think that's probably something that Mito just have to kind of be careful of going forward. I don't know. Like, I think this was always likely to be a tricky game for Mito. That they lost doesn't really surprise me that much. It's probably more about how they react to this defeat, and I'm sure we'll come onto it later, but they have a game against Gifu coming up at home this weekend. And so if you're asking what the doctor ordered, I would say it's probably a spoonful of Gifu to be taken on Sunday afternoon, I would say.
Very, very well put. I think we should mention from the typhoon that kind of swept through Japan last weekend, my area, kind of Tokyo, and I'm pretty sure I'm okay saying Gifu as well, were relatively unscathed, but I think Chiba Prefecture got it particularly bad.
Yes, they did.
There were quite a lot of households there still without electricity, so there was quite a big kind of a charity drive and sort of donation collections before this game. I'm very hesitant to say that played any part in Jeff looking more motivated than usual, because I think it's a bit cheap to suggest that would motivate professional footballers more than any other game. But I don't know, maybe it did make a slight difference. Also, just to mention Tamida again, he was at the heart of everything good for Jeff early on, but he did bundle over a Mito attacker at one point. This wasn't in the DAZN highlights, so I don't know if you've seen the incident, but it looked like a penalty to me. This was before Jeff got their penalty, so if that had been given, maybe Mito would have gone 2-1 up. It would have been a different game. But there you go. Sometimes you get them, sometimes you don't. Just before we move away from the top six then, Stuart, we did briefly touch on the what us Brits would call argy-bargy or handbags in the Kofu Kashiwa game. Just for the listeners who didn't see this, what actually went down?
So we have two protagonists here. We have Kenta Uchida, the Vanfori Kofu left fullback / wingback, very experienced, been around quite a few clubs, and we have Kashiwa Reysol right fullback Isuke Sagawa, who probably usually he shouldn't really be playing right back. Maybe they've got injuries there, I don't know. In about the 53rd minute, if I remember correctly, Sagawa put a really forceful challenge in on Uchida. So Uchida just got to the ball. Sagawa got to the ball first, but he took out as Uchida kicked the ball, or tried to kick the ball, Sagawa kicked Uchida's foot and gave away a free kick. And I don't think any action was taken from it. But Uchida wasn't very happy at all. And two or three minutes later, I think I tweeted this out on the day after. he didn't have to wait long for his chance of vengeance, because about 3 minutes later, he went in thigh high, and it was incredibly dangerous. It was possibly one of the worst kind of attempts at a challenge you'll see all day, and it was clearly premeditated, clearly retributional. And the most amazing thing about it is that the referee saw it and didn't give anything. He didn't give a card. He gave Uchido a talking to. Sagawa's lucky he didn't get some serious injury done to him. And I think that I think on the Zone, was it Judge Replay show that they have on? I think Uchido is front and center of that this week as well, and quite rightly so, because it was. I mean, we can handle argy bargy, we can handle like mistimed challenges, but that was, I mean, it was quite clear what he had in his mind, and it was, it's one of those where he catches him 5 centimeters in a different place, and he breaks Sagawa's leg.
When you see what red cards are handed out for on a regular basis, for the referee to have seen that and say, "Yes, that's fine, carry on," is literally unbelievable.
Yeah, it's. I mean, you look at kind of. Remember when Koki Kiyotaki was sent off for taking 5 seconds too long for a throw-in and getting a second yellow card for that, and nothing gets done about this particular challenge. I think if we ever do get VAR, I think that would be an automatic red card. And I genuinely don't understand why the referee hasn't seen that it's... I mean, it's not even foul play. It's violent play. And it's unacceptable.
Yeah, he was trying to hurt the other player, wasn't he?
Yeah, and exactly. Like I said, we can handle mistimed challenges. We can handle kind of pushing players away or getting in people's face. But just the fact that someone would kind of it seems like deliberately go out and think, right, he did this to me 2 minutes ago, I'm going to show him who's boss here. That's Sunday League stuff. I mean, it's not a good look at all, to be quite frank.
It'll be interesting to see if there is any retrospective punishment forthcoming from the league. I don't know exactly.
Do they have retrospective punishment?
Well, players have had bans in the past for things like, you know, kicking advertising hoardings and stuff.
Yeah, that's true.
They've been handed out afterwards, so it's not beyond the realms of possibility. But, the J-League does have a tendency to make these rules up as they go along. I think one thing that might be in Uchida's favour, if you like, is that if the referee's seen that and put it in his official report, I think that closes the door on retrospective action, because I think in the way it works in England is that the retrospective action only comes into play if the referee completely missed it.
Yeah, yeah.
So if the referee says, apparently there was a thing, I didn't see it, then the FA, if you like, can take over and punish. But if the referee puts in his report, yeah, there was a flashpoint between player A and player B, but I thought it was handbag, so I let it go, then I think he's probably in the clear. But it was unsavoury, and usually I'm a bit of an old school football fan, and whenever the commentator says, "Oh, that's not the kind of thing you want to see at football match," I'm usually thinking, "Yes, I do." But it's a bit much. I don't like seeing. It was a very cowardly. Tackle, I think, tackle isn't the right word.
Yeah.
Assault is probably
better.
But it wasn't good. And I think the only positive might be the fact that we're talking about this so much, and it's generated so much attention, is because it's very rare in the J-League. Whereas if we were doing like the South American football pod, we'd probably be ranking like the top 10 leg-breaking tackles of the round.
Yeah.
Let's hope it's an isolated incident. We're not talking about this kind of thing on the regular. Okay, then. So just a couple of other games on the fringes of the playoff zone to talk about now. Stuart, Fagiano Okayama in seventh at the moment, 2 points behind Mito and Omiya in sixth. They sorry to say, well, actually, I don't know. They dispatched FC Gifu 2-0 at the weekend. Lee Yong-jae put Okeyama ahead with a very well-taken, controlled volley. But then, my personal point of view, Gifu showed a lot of character to stay in the game. They hit the post twice. And then Hayato Nakama, a player who we've mentioned many times, playing some of the best football of his career at the moment. He scored for the third game in a row with a quite superb strike towards the end. And that was 2-0 and the game was done and dusted. What did you make of this game?
Yeah, I think you've summed it up kind of perfectly there. I think Leon Jay's goal was really good. Nice cushion volley from a lofted through pass. He kind of found the space in between the centre halves, which he's adept at doing. And it was the finish of a player who scored 17 goals this year. He knew exactly what he wanted to do, and he executed it really well. I think in the second half, I think like you said, Gifu played really well. I sensed desperation. That's what I sensed in that second half. I mean, it didn't take long for three forwards to arrive off the bench in the second half. And I think that's what I sensed. And I sensed it in the play as well. Like, Gifu were throwing forward people with abandon. I think they knew it was a must-not-lose game. And Kota Miyamoto hit the bar. Trying to think who had a header saved on the line by Ichimori. I think it was Takafumi Toma, the on-loan defender. But always in the back of your mind, Gifu not taking these chances, you think something's going to happen. And Nakama's goal was a beauty. Just he didn't hit it hard. He just timed it perfectly, curled it into the top corner. Game over. And yeah, I think the word dispatched is a fair kind of way to say it. And it wasn't comfortable for Okeyama, but
Okeyama just a better side, weren't
yes.
they?
Oh yes, yeah. They were a better side that had two individuals that were much better than the individuals on the opposite side.
Just as an aside, my older brother is much more intelligent than me, but doesn't like football. So what sometimes happened when we'd sit and watch a game together, and it would have happened it with this game, is he would watch that game with me, and then seeing Gifu have chance after chance in the second half, he would apply logic and say, "Oh, Gifu are going to score in a minute," and I'd have to say, "No, they won't. The other team's going to go down, down to the other end of the pitch, because that's how football works."
Yes,
So yeah, it's funny. I could just imagine my brother saying, "Hey, Gifu are playing their way back into this." I'd be like, "No, they're not. It's not how football. When you're at the bottom of the league, that's not how football works." And I think, is it right? Gifu signed Tobunomu Yokoyama this week.
Yes, they did.
He's back from a brain tumor or a brain.
That's what illness. I understand. Yeah, I think he's been around the leagues, but I think he's been out of football for a while. I think he was at Kumamoto. I think obviously people know him from like Consadole Sapporo. I think he was at Omiya as well. I think he's. He's obviously unattached, or he was unattached, so he's eligible to sign and be registered. I don't know if it's what Gifu need. I assume Gifu need goals, not centre-halves. But at the same time, like, it's difficult to begrudge someone who's gone through kind of what he's gone through and made his way back to the professional stage. Good luck to him, and I hope he can come in and I think shore up the defence is a pipe dream, but if they can stop hemorrhaging goals just long enough so that we can start to score them again, I think that would be a large help. But it'd be good to have him in. I know he played a couple of training games before Makoto Kitano decided to sign him, but yeah, good on him, and welcome him, and obviously I'm sure he's got a lot of backing from the rest of the J League community, so that'd be good.
Yeah, I echo those sentiments, and thanks to Steve Balm on Twitter who tipped me off about that, about the signing as well. Okay, Tokushima Vortis are ninth in the table now, but just 4 points off the playoffs. They drew 1-1 at home against Nagasaki this weekend. That leaves Nagasaki in 11th, 3 points behind Tokushima, so 7 points off the playoffs. Keiji Tamada, the veteran forward, hit the post for Nagasaki just before half time, but the first half was goalless. Then in the second half, Naoki Nomura set up Masaki Watai to give Tokushima a 1-0 lead. And then Ibarbo centred for who else but Hiroto Goya to level things up for Nagasaki. It was a bit with about 20 minutes left. Right at the death, Yutokuchida hit the bar for Tokushima, but neither side could find the winner. It's finished 1-1, which I think was probably a fair result. Did you see any of this game, Stuart?
Yeah, I just saw the highlights. Something that jumped out to me watching the game is that Tokushima didn't have any foreign players in their matchday squad. It's kind of odd when you think that they've got like a Spanish manager and coaching staff. Obviously, Cicinho is still recovering from injury back in Spain, but yeah, they have a squad full of Japanese players, which in kind of J2, that's very much the exception. You know, like most teams have their Brazilians or their South Koreans. Like, I haven't gone through, but I'd be almost certain that there aren't any other teams that didn't have any foreign players in their kind of match day squad. Maybe Yehime or Renofu Yamaguchi, possibly, but it's kind of a rare event. 1-1, yeah, it probably fair. Like, the highlights I saw, kind of Tokushima had the better of the game, I think. It's a great goal by Watai, really, really well taken. I like him a lot. He's come on leaps and bounds this year. But you can't really leave Hiroto Goya with any space in the six-yard area. So I think 1-0. Yeah, I think Tokushima still, they're on the outside looking in, but there's a way for them, but it will entail a really good run towards the end of the year.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. I think the reason I mentioned those two games together is because just looking at the table, I think Tokushima is where I would draw the line for playoff contention with 10 games to go. So I'd say that the current top six look pretty set. And the only teams who I think would break in are maybe Okayama, who are in seventh at the moment, and then possibly Kofu in eighth or Tokushima in ninth. Who do you think of that trio? Who do you think is the strongest? Who do you think is most likely to maybe pinch a playoff spot?
I think I'm going to have to stay with Kofu. I think they've got that X. Although they've all got that kind of X factor. What they need. I mean, Fagiano obviously have Nakama and Lee Yong-jae. I mean, Kofu have Dudu and Utaka. Tokushima are much more of a team, but they still have the individual talent to go forward. I think if I was putting money on it, if I was forced to, I'd say Kofu out of those three teams, but it'd be a close one, I think. What do you think?
Yeah, it's very close to call, which is why I put you on the spot rather than giving my own opinion. I think Okayama, when we talk about Okayama, we always mention Lee Yong-jae and Nakama, which they're definitely not a two-man team, but they really do rely very heavily on those two, or they have done this season, which I think leads me to believe, yeah, Tokushima are probably the best, in inverted commas, team.
Yep.
Of the three, but they're not quite as explosive as Kofu when they come forward. So yeah, I think it's an easier question because I think Okayama are probably the weakest side of the three. But yeah, there's not much, maybe just a cigarette paper between Tokushima and Kofu for me. So yeah, I have to wait and see, Stuart. I can't get off the fence. I've got splinters. On Tokushima, I think I read something, I can't remember, Jordi Buijs, the Dutch defender, he couldn't play. I'm not sure if he was suspended or there's some kind of, is he plays for, is he on loan from Nagasaki?
He is on loan from Nagasaki, Tokushima. Yeah.
So I think terms of his loan meant that he couldn't play. So yeah, I think he would have been picked if available.
Yeah, obviously that's common in J2. Mm. Like, I know Koya Kazama couldn't play for Okinawa, Jesus. FC Ryukyu, sorry.
That's the new expansion team, Okinawa, Jesus, yeah.
It's the new one. Yeah, so Boyce couldn't play because he was, he was, the terms of his loan contract wouldn't allow it to. Like, so I still think that just my image of Ricardo Rodriguez is someone who likes to, who did bring in foreign players, you know, like he had Danny Carvajal there. He had, Cicinho Azea Bueno as well. Like, and now you can field a squad full of Japanese players. And I think that's full credit to him as well. But yeah, Boyce will be back in the team next week, smashing in free kicks from all over the joint. And good on
him. Fair enough. Okay, just a few one-liners about the other games that took place over the weekend then, Stuart. 10th place Kanazawa drew 2-2 at home against the FC Ryukyu at the weekend. Very big crowd, over 13,000 for this game. The Kanazawa captain, Tobunobu Hiroi, made a horrible mistake for Ryukyu's second goal, kind of messing up the kind of clearance that he could probably normally complete in his sleep. I don't know if you saw that goal on the highlights, but I felt a lot of sympathy for him with that one. It was pretty horrible. Yuki Kakita almost won it for Kanazawa at the end. He went round the Ryukyu goalkeeper, Carvajal, but then hit the post with his shot. That would have been a grandstand finish. Tokyo Verdy, who are 12th now, they drew away at Niigata, who were in 13th, so probably not the result that those sides would have wanted to get them a bit closer to the playoff places. Leandro's penalty put Verdy in front in this game, but another Brazilian, Silvinho, headed in an equaliser for Niigata. On Verdy, very briefly, the new guys, Clebinho at right back and Jailton Paraiba, who's up front, are looking settled already, made a big difference. Verdy fans probably wishing that they'd arrived a bit earlier in the season. In the Orange Derby in Yamaguchi, Yamaguchi in 14th beat 15th placed Ehime FC 2-1. All the goals were in the first half in this game, but the best shot was probably in the second half when Yuta Kamiya, Ehime player, almost broke the crossbar in half with an effort that didn't go in. But yeah, Yamaguchi 2-1 winners in the end. The only foreign player in either of the match day squads was the Uzbek defender Dostan.
Dostan,
who was on the bench for Yamaguchi and didn't come on. So that was I think you name checked Yamaguchi and Ehime, so you know your stuff.
Oh, there you go.
But yeah, along with Tokushima, they were foreign alight the weekend. Probably the most important of the games that I put in the miscellaneous category, Fukuoka, now in 18th, got a massive win away at second bottom Tochi SC. King Jogo, Hisashi Jogo, grabbed the winner very early on in the 9th minute in this game. And there wasn't really much to talk about, as we discussed before recording after that. But Fukuoka ground out the 1-0 win, which I think it's another nail in Tochigi's coffin for this season, really. Do you want to pick out anything from those four games in particular?
Yeah, well, I'll just say that I think Avispa Fukuoka is safe. They're 9 points clear of Tochigi now. I don't see a 9-point swing. If I'm honest, I don't see Tochigi taking 9 points from their final, what is it, 10 games, 11 games? I can't remember how many are left. But I don't see them taking 9 points. So I think that, Jogo's goal very early on, I think it was 6th or 7th, maybe 8th minute, a good finish after good work from Ricky Matada. So that was a very good win for Avispa. I think it was a good point for Ryukyu as well. I know they capitalised on mistakes, but they've had their... they've been on the wrong end of mistakes throughout this year. So, you know, the old adage that the luck evens itself out throughout the course of the year. I think they can be a testament to that, because, you know, they've had some rough luck with decisions that have gone against them kind of all through this year. And so it was good for them to get a point up there. Huge crowd, a fantastic effort. I'm not sure why. I don't know if it was a special match like Rurasa Kumamoto had, the previous week, or if it was just a special promotion, or if it was the last day of the holidays, or I genuinely don't know, but it's a fantastic effort to get 13,000 up in Kanazawa.
It might just be the Shinji Ono factor.
Like, I mean,
to be honest,
do Yokohama still have to go there? Because if they get 13,000 for the Shinji Ono factor, then crikey, there'll be a full house for when they're away at Yokohama, unfortunately. But yeah, I think the Niigata, Verdi, Ehime, Renault are the epitome of late season mid table games. I watched the highlights, but I genuinely can't remember kind of what I saw in them. So
yeah, I think you're anything like me, you're watching the highlights thinking I've got to pay attention, but it's difficult because your mind is already wandering to perhaps more important games that are coming
on. I watched them, but I couldn't tell you anything that happened of note in those games, to be quite honest.
Okay, well, maybe we should look ahead to the weekend fixtures coming up then, Stuart. It's going to be round 33 taking place over Saturday and Sunday this week. It's a bit of a strange one. There's no J1 games this weekend. I'm not 100% sure the reason why, but we were chatting before recording. We think it's probably because the Rugby World Cup kicks off in Japan over the weekend, so a lot of J1 stadiums perhaps being used.
I'm going to a J1 stadium next Monday to watch a rugby game.
And where will you be?
I will be at Toyota Stadium to watch Wales against Georgia.
Should be a grand occasion.
There we go. I'm hoping so.
Okay, and also no J3 games at the weekend coming up. I don't think that's because J3 stadiums are being used for the Rugby World Cup, but I don't know, perhaps J3, obviously a smaller league, fewer teams, in order to make sure that they finish, if you like, on time. I think their league sometimes gets slowed down with the odd kind of free weekend, a little bit like when the Beijing Bird's Nest Stadium for the 2008 Olympics was going to be finished before the Athens one for the 2004 games. The IOC had to ask the Chinese construction site to kind of slow things down a bit. It's the equivalent of taking too long over a throw-in, I suppose, Stuart, if you win in the last 5 minutes. So we only have J2 football to pass through this weekend. I picked out a couple of games which I thought were worth keeping an eye on. The games are spread pretty evenly across Saturday and Sunday. On Saturday, I picked out two games which I thought looked good. The 4 p.m. game, Fukuoka hosting Okayama. Principally because I think Fukuoka do still need a couple of wins to be 100% safe from the drop, and Okayama going well over the last couple of games, it could be a good match. It's also because of the rugby, Fukuoka's regular level 5 stadium is not available, so it's going to be at the nearby or the literally adjacent athletic stadium in Hakatanomori. That's where Fukuoka had a very unhappy start to the season, you'll recall, Stuart, under Fabio Pecchia.
I remember him.
So yeah, it'd be interesting to see how they if they can exercise or excise, I guess, some of those demons on Saturday. The other game on Saturday, I thought it was good, 6 p.m. Nagasaki hosting Kyoto. So Nagasaki have been going well recently, and Kyoto haven't, but they did snap their poor run by beating Machida last weekend. So I'm interested to see which way that game goes. I think that's quite a difficult one to call. The Sunday game I thought looked good is probably the same one that you'll be keeping an eye on. I guess Tochigi, second bottom, hosting Kagoshima, third bottom, at 7 p.m.
I don't think it'll be good.
Yeah. Say that again.
I'm not sure that it will be good. I think it'll be one of those ones where kind of it'll be the same as why I watched Kagoshima versus Montero Yamagata last week. Like, I think this will be a game, regardless of the result that Gifu have in their game, it will be a game that all Gifu supporters will be watching. A draw. I mean, ideally, I'd like a Tochigi win, to be quite frank, because that's the I mean, it doesn't really matter what Tochigi do, because quite frankly, Gifu have to catch Kagoshima, and so I think, yeah, between this game and the rearranged game that Kagoshima have against Gifu, I mean, if Kagoshima win these two games, I think they'll survive. So it'll be I'm not sure it'll be a game for the purists on that. It's not even a crappy pitch.
I was going to mention that the pitch was it's vying with Kyoto for ploughed field of the week.
It's hideous. But Tochigi always is. I don't understand what it is with that pitch. In the spring it looks too dry, but in the summer it just looks like it'll cut up, and it looks like kind of the horse's parade has been on it before the game. And yeah, it won't be a very good game. It'll be exciting.
It's going to be a horrible match, football, depending on your preference. But yeah, any other games you think look good on the slate?
You know, it's a really kind of I'm not sure what the word is, and like, it's kind of a passive round of games. There aren't many there aren't many games that will move the needle that much. Like obviously last week we had Yokohama and Omiya, which was like a heavyweights at the top, but this week it's difficult to see where the kind of the big
game of the weekend. Yeah.
Like if I was scheduling the game of the weekend, I think it probably would be Tochigi and Kagoshima, just because of what's riding on it. I think the Avispa Okayama game as well, just because of the proximity between the teams. They're not super near, but it's direct on the Shinkansen, bullet train in West Japan. There'll be a lot of Okayama fans going there. And I think maybe Kofu Niigata, because I think Kofu, I think they need to kind of start winning. And I think this would be an ideal way, an ideal time to start, if they have playoff aspirations, I would say. And like I said, it is a kind of a passive kind of match day. I think the only, probably I would say, if Kashiwa don't win, then we'll have to reconvene next week and sit them down and have a serious talk with them and ask them kind of what's going on. Why are they doing this?
Yes, they should be meeting Ehime at home, shouldn't they?
They should be, yeah.
Okay, well, mention of passive rounds brings us to a quick check-in with J3 before we wrap up for the evening, Stuart. At the top in the third tier, it's still Gunma and Kumamoto, who are 1 and 2. They're level on 44 points. But Gunma do have a much superior goal difference. They're on plus 21 to Kumamoto's plus 8. In the weekend just gone, Gunma beat FC Tokyo's under 23s 4-2 in Tokyo at Ajinomoto Field Nishigaoka, whereas Kumamoto made the long trip to Hachinohe and came back with a 2-1 win. Kita Kyushu are just 1 point further back, 43 points in third. They also won on the road, 2-1 at Fukushima. Fujiade are in fourth place. They're the only one of the top four that didn't win. They drew 0-0 away at Nagano Parasero, so they stay on 42 points, just two off the top. So this is very tight, but I think there is a gap after fourth place. So I'm still watching that top four is where I think the promoted teams are going to come from. But I haven't had time to watch the highlights of all the J3 games, so I can't comment too much. But perhaps we'll check in with J3 again once the picture gets a bit clearer later on in the season. Any closing words or final thoughts, Stuart, before we retire for the week?
On J3, well, I think it's J3 is something that's very worthy of us revisiting, because that's a hell of a title race that we've got there, because four teams within 2 points of each other and coming into the final kind of group of fixtures, and they all have to play each other, and it's going to be it's going to be a fantastic kind of title and promotion race, because obviously Gunma, Ruaso and Kita Kyushu, they've all been in J2 in the not too distant past, and it'll be good for them to get back up into the big time again. And obviously, I'm not sure about Fujian and my FC's license situation, but they might be looking to get into the J League 2 for the first time in their history. So, yeah, we should definitely come back to J3 in the future.
All good. Okay, well, thanks for your input. I think we said everything that we needed to say to make sure our respective wives have a J League free week of conversation at home. Where can people keep up with you, Stuart, if they need more content before the weekend?
Content. I'm full of content. If they need me, if they need a Gifu-centric content on Twitter, @sushi_football is where you'll find me. Where can they find you?
It's unchanging @J2CantoBytes on Twitter. Yeah, I tweet sporadically, but as eloquently as possible. So please
quality,
give me a follow.
Quantity, right?
Yeah, keep in touch. Yeah, that's it. Okay, well, yeah, I think it just remains to say thanks to everyone for listening. As always, we are the little brother of the big. The Big Pod J Talk podcast. So please, as always, download and listen to Ben and the guys. I'm sure they'll have more to say on the ACL, possibly the Emperor's Cup as well this week. And if you feel the need or you're able, then we do have the J Talk podcast Patreon that you can visit and contribute if possible. That's always much appreciated if you can. Throw us a dollar or two. I think mine automatically comes up in dollars when I check the page. I'm not sure why. But yeah, if you're listening for free, that's obviously fine too. There's no discrimination. We're an equal opportunities content provider. But yeah, hope everybody enjoys the football at the weekend and or rugby. Apparently that's happening. So yeah, Stuart, enjoy your trip to Toyota.
I will do.
And, yeah, everyone have a good week, and we'll catch up with you again next week and see how the J League got on over the weekend. Yeah, have a nice weekend, everyone, and talk to you soon. Bye for now.